relative to producing a tool that helps us breed healthier, or animals that stay healthier and have lower susceptibility to bovine respiratory disease. So in general, what I'm going to talk about first is talk a little bit about BRD and profitability. And for all of the producers in here, I'm sure you know the influence of respiratory disease on your cost of production, and there's some evidence on how it produces our outputs from production that are going to influence our profitability. Then I want to talk a little bit about the genetics of bovine respiratory disease from a couple different perspectives and what some of the current research is actually showing us relative to bovine respiratory disease. And then I want to go to the next step and actually talk a little bit about guidelines that we could establish as an organization, as Beef Improvement Federation, to help drive some of the data collection and really position us for the ability to select animals who have lower incidence of respiratory disease. The mic's not picking me up. Okay. I think it is on. I don't know. Because I can yell, or I can use this. You want me to go to this one? That one will pick me up. I might blow some people out on that one. Okay. Talk in. Okay. I get to moving a lot. So, okay, now it works. Yeah. Okay, so what I want to do in general is talk a little bit, set the stage for this whole perspective, and talk about bovine respiratory disease and profitability, which most of us produce cattle know something about the cost of treatment associated with respiratory disease, and also some of the outcome effects related to incidences of that disease. And then talk a little bit about the genetics of respiratory disease, where we are at in several different studies, and what that tells us about that genetic component determining or influencing whether an animal is actually treated for respiratory disease or not. And then talk a little bit about the role of Beef Improvement Federation in establishing guidelines that might position us as an industry for developing selection tools that are going to help us reduce the incidence of this problem in the beef industry. Okay? So if we look at the economics of respiratory disease, and we talk a little bit about that, it's the leading cause of mortality in our industry. Okay? It is, without a doubt, the leading cause of deaths and our death loss in our industry. So it's obviously a trait that has an influence on our overall profitability. Now, Dr. D. Griffin, also in 97, reported losses from an industry standpoint at about $750 million a year. Okay, now let's think back to 1997. Our pricing structure was considerably different than it is now. So I would only expect the influence of BRD on the overall industry would be much greater than it was in 1997. But still, very important to our overall industry. And then if we look at a study by McNeil and others in a 1996 report, they put the value of lost production and carcass value as a result of bovine respiratory disease to average about $92 a head. So clearly it has an economic value to our industry. If we could use genetics in some way to help us reduce the incidence of this, in addition to all of the other tools we have in vaccination programs and some of the very good antibiotic treatments we currently have. But if we look at this from a genetic standpoint, really the question is there a genetic component to whether an animal gets respiratory disease or is treated for respiratory disease or not? So what I want to do is present a little bit of the evidence for a genetic component to incidence of respiratory disease, and I want to look at this from two perspectives. Okay, from a quantitative perspective, I'm a quantitative geneticist, and from a more molecular perspective, because I think they both tell us a little bit about bovine respiratory disease in general. Okay. So the first one we're going to look at is the quantitative perspective. And we're going to talk about the heritabilities that have been reported for incidence of bovine respiratory disease in various populations. Now, I just got done teaching an undergraduate class in animal breeding and genetics and gave the final. So just a quick review of what heritability is. Don't worry, that won't be on a final exam. But heritability says if we took everybody in this room and as you leave after I'm done or before I'm done, we took a height measurement. And we're not all the same. Heritability tells us what proportion of the differences we see in this population are due to additive genetics. Okay, so that's what we're looking at relative to bovine respiratory disease. What proportion of that incidence, and this is a little different trait, okay, because it's not continuous like height would be if we went and measured everybody, what proportion of the differences are due to additive genetics? So passed from one generation to the next and influencing the performance of those progeny. Okay, so what I did is I summarized and put up essentially three key studies. I realized there's one I missed from much earlier in research from Noel Mugley Cockett, and I think it was published in 1992. But if we start looking at some of these heritability estimates, and look here at the heritability from different scenarios and different data sets. Okay, so one of the things we find when we look at incidence of a binary trait, heritability changes depending on the frequency of the occurrence of the two events. So incidence in this case might be whether they're treated or not. And so it's important to interpret these heritability estimates based on estimate and bear that in mind. But Dr. Gary Snoder at the Meat Animal Research Center, looking at feedlot data from that group and over time, with about 18,000 different records from the Meat Animal Research Center, reported a heritability that ranged from about 4% to 8%. So from the standpoint of the previous talk, slightly lower than some of our pregnancy or fertility estimates of heritability. But if we look at that on the underlying scale, where we're looking at a whole host of genes that might influence whether an animal is treated or not, the heritability is about 18%. So a continuous distribution, if you will, of underlying genes that contribute to whether an animal succumbs or is treated for bovine respiratory disease. We look at a couple other studies from Schneider in 2011. He looked at it from two different perspectives. One of the data sets they used was from Iowa State University in their teaching and research herd, Angus cattle, and then they also looked at it from a feedlot standpoint with a completely different data set that was really a centralized steer test, if you will. And they reported heritabilities of 11% and 7%, with incidence rates at about 11% to 9.6%. Okay? Now, the third study was one we actually did at Colorado State, and one of our graduate students, Brian Brigham, did some of the estimation and wrote it up. And over 2 years, in a commercial feedlot, we had just under 3,000 steers that we recorded observations for respiratory disease treatments and not. And in one of the years, we had a huge treatment rate at about 48%, and the other year, we had about 9%. And there's a whole host of reasons why we suspect there were different treatment rates in those years, but our heritability estimate was about 17%. Okay, so we're starting to see that there's some evidence on the quantitative side relative to there being a genetic component to whether an animal is treated for bovine respiratory disease or not. Okay, but let's look at it from the other perspective. What does the molecular information say? And most of what I'm going to pull off of for this is the result of a bovine respiratory disease complex coordinated agricultural project that's funded by the USDA NEFA. And if you want to read more about this project, it's ongoing. You can look at the website brdcomplex.org, and there's a whole host of information about the participants. And in fairness, I didn't list everybody. There's 21 research folks involved, and it's a very in-depth project looking at how in the beef and the feed and the dairy industries can we understand more about the genetics associated with bovine respiratory disease. And I'm looking at this purely from the standpoint of genetic improvement and what does the molecular information say. So Dr. Holly Nyberg's, the project's led by Dr. Jim Womack at Texas A&M University, but Dr. Jerry Taylor, who I think probably talked about this when he talked about heifer fertility, mentioned some of the outcomes of this, and Dr. Holly Nyberg's provided me with some information more on the molecular side of bovine respiratory disease. Now, on the feedlot side, Dr. Nyberg's from Washington State. They've got about 2,000 feedlot samples that are collected from five different breeds, and one of the five is what they're calling crossbreds. But it's a case control study. So they get a case, they have an animal that is from the same group, that's a control, that's not treated. So there's 2,000, so 1,000 cases, 1,000 controls. And what they do, they've genotyped all these animals, and they developed a genotypic relationship. So normally, if you think about you and your sister, your brother, you share 50% of your genes in common, but it could range from 0%, depending on Mendelian sampling, or 100%. Well, they actually measure that using the genotypes. And Dr. Nyberg's estimated the heritability using this more molecular-based relationship at 37%. Okay. Now we got to weigh that a little bit because it is case control and we have equal numbers of treated versus equal numbers of control animals. But again, more evidence that there's a component, a genetic component to bovine respiratory disease. Now further evidence actually comes from the dairy side of this grant that has moved on a little bit further, have a little more access to some of the dairy animals. But there's been one paper published out of this grant with Nyberg's et al. In 2014 that identified approximately 100, just over 100 different genomic regions that they could show were associated with whether an animal is treated for respiratory disease or not, and actually a more detailed phenotype with some severity scoring. And then Dr. Taylor today in the other session said he was going to mention this in his analysis of some Holstein data emanating from this project, showed indicated a large effect gene on chromosome 27. I think it was the FAT1 gene, which has been shown to be involved in immune function. Okay, so we're developing a case that there's genetic contribution to susceptibility for bovine respiratory disease, measured, both as a severity system or as a treated yes or no. Okay, therefore, knowing that, if you will, there is the potential for genetic improvement in this trait because we've got evidence that genetics plays a role in whether animals are treated or not. So what we want to do is then take this, and if we could develop tools to enable you to select breeding animals that are going to produce progeny that are healthier and have lower treatment rates in the feedlot, what would they be? It's probably going to be something like an EPD for susceptibility, and what's going to go into that? Well, you're going to need phenotypic data and you're going to need genomic data. We want to leverage both of those sources of information, okay, to develop this EPD and give producers a tool for actually selecting animals that stay healthier. Okay. And there's several projects. I've already mentioned one of those, talked about this one. There's another project, a U.S. foundational grant that's going on between CSU and the Meat Animal Research Center that's looking at sampling large numbers of animals from the feedlots that are treated and not treated and using some genotyping and pooling approaches to develop identify regions of the genome that are associated with respiratory disease. There's been the Zoetis project that worked. They helped fund at Colorado State that I mentioned relative to Brian Brigham's paper that helped us look at some, is designed to look for regions of the genome that are associated with respiratory disease, but also enabled us to look at it from a more quantitative standpoint. All of those are designed to help us develop tools that are going to select animals that have a lower susceptibility to this problem. Okay, so let's step forward and say, what if we had that tool? What role does it play? Because we've heard about the importance of fertility, right, in a selection program, and what that is a driver and an economically relevant trait related to profitability. But let's take that and say we had a tool to help select for this. Okay, so Allison Van Enenam and Mike McNeil did some simulation work that looked at a terminal sire situation where you're choosing bulls to go into a terminal sire breeding program, and we're going to harvest all those progeny. Okay, if we had a tool that allowed us to select animals whose progeny in that feedlot don't get sick as often for bovine respiratory disease, that EPD, based on their economic simulation, was about 7 times more important than either post-weaning gain or feed intake related to those terminal sires. So clearly important, at least in that scenario that they set up. And I think Allison and Mike gave this presentation about a year, it was either a year ago or 2 years ago at BIF. okay, and reported on that those results, and you can see them in one of those 2 years' proceedings. Okay, if you look at it from the standpoint of marbling and yield grade, it's about two or three times more economically important. Okay, thinking about the magnitude of bovine respiratory disease on a multi-trait selection system where we're going to send all of the cattle or all of the offspring from those bulls through through the feedlot, not retain any heifers. Okay, so clearly an economic important even in a multi-trait selection system. Okay, the problem with respiratory disease as we see it now is the fact that there's multiple ways to measure that. We've got the binary, what I call the binary, the treated or not treated for respiratory disease. Okay, that's one way to measure an outcome, gather a phenotype. Kind of like calving ease. If rather than doing a calving ease score of 1 to 5, you said, yep, I pulled that calf out of that heifer, or no, I didn't. One of two options. Okay, kind of like the pregnancy observations. Either she's either pregnant or not, unless we start looking at when she bred in the breeding season, how early. Okay, so that's one way to measure an outcome. The other way is to use, and the BRD CAP has used this, one of the diagnostic criteria in severity scoring like Sheila McGurk's. And it takes a calf, this is used a lot in the dairy industry, a calf and looks at rectal temperature, and you score it from 0 to 3, and then you look at cough, and it gets one of the scores depending upon where it falls, and the nasal discharge, and eye scores, and ear scores, to develop this criteria. We could use that as well. But really, and if you're interested in this, you can go on the University of Wisconsin website and pull down this scoring criteria. But multiple ways to measure this, okay? But what we really need, if our goal is to produce a tool for breeders, is some standardization. Okay? And that's where BIF comes in relative to helping us develop guidelines that breed associations and seed stock producers and cooperatives can start using to collect data that might help us be applied to the industry in a genetic improvement program. So the whole goal of this is to enable production of a selection tool, add accuracy to our selection, and produce animals with lower treatment rates. Okay? One of the things, just a little more background, one of the things that really stimulated this from all of these grants is, well, all right, if we come up with a panel of markers that are associated with respiratory disease, how do we actually test those or validate those in an industry setting? I mean, if you think about marbling, you know, genomic markers for marbling score or yield grade, that data is sitting out there in most of our breed associations, okay? And we can get access to that to do some sort of validation. I don't know a breed association right now that is recording on a routine, regular basis or a producer group relative to respiratory disease. There's no standardization. Okay? So how do we get some more focus in this so that once these genomic panels are identified, we can actually test those in various populations and help develop EPD? Okay? So what we did, BIF charged a group to come up with guidelines for this, and that's where I want to talk about kind of where we're headed with these. And this is the committee that we put together. Okay, we got quite a bit of diversity. We've got Dr. D. Griffin from the University of Nebraska and Dr. Jim Lowe from the University of Illinois, both veterinarians that work very closely with the feedlot industry. Okay, and have a lot of experience in that area, and we thought we could leverage them, their knowledge in helping us develop guidelines for how we record disease information. Okay, and then we got Larry Keene, the USDA Meat Animal Research Center, that is involved with the USDA Foundation grant and a lot of the health research going on there. We got Holly Nybergs, Chris Seabury, who are both on that BRD CAP project. They're on the committee. Allison Van Enenam, that is on the CAP grant as well and highly involved in extension efforts and producer education, and then myself. So our charge has been to develop guidelines. So what I'm reporting on today is where we are in that progress towards developing guidelines for respiratory disease and what our next step is relative to getting these put in the recommendation. Okay, so where we started at is we leveraged the knowledge of Dr. Griffin and Dr. Lowe and looked at what are feedlots recording now, realizing there's various levels of data recording comfort at different feedlots.
Okay.
And so what Dr. Lowe and Dr. Griffin did is they looked at two widely used feedlot software programs, one from Animal Health International and the other one from Micro Technologies, used to be Micro Beef Technology. Okay. And what Dr. Lowe and Griffin has told us that they're used, that they're probably account for most of the feedlot cattle going through the U.S. Okay, and working together, Dr. Lowe, with this this organization, company Production Animal Consultation, they actually summarized some of the data that was coming out into their consultation services from the feedlots using these two programs. Okay, and I think we're going to find it very interesting relative to what feedlots are already actually doing. Okay, and so I want to give you a summary. There's a whole host of other parameters that the feedlots are recording, but things that I think are key to developing guidelines for bovine respiratory disease. And this is typically what they record on the lots of cattle that they're putting into their yard. Okay, so we have 100% recording rate, and so in the parentheses is the recording rate for those groups of cattle. Okay, so what is reported through those two software programs? All right, so end date, obviously 100%. If the pen or the lot has been closed out, we've got 100% recording rate. Sex of the group, owner is at 74% recording rate. Buyer is a little bit lower. Origin of the cattle is 71%. And then you can read here, starting average weight, ending average weight, and they keep track, obviously, of the number of head. Breed and risk factors, almost no reporting. Okay, so the feedlots aren't paying any attention in this system relative to the breed composition of those lots of cattle, at least using these two software programs. Now, when we start to look at treatment information, this is where I think it gets very interesting, because there's some opportunities for us as a genetic improvement organization, a Beef Improvement Federation, to really leverage some of the data they're recording. So if we look at this, when an animal is treated, 100% recording on date, 100% recording on product supplied, which you can imagine has to happen for withdrawal periods, right? So kind of seeing what I expected on that data recording, they get 99% record of weight to treatment, 74% on the temperature recording, so the rectal temperature of those animals. So starting to get some detailed information on these animals that they're actually treating, okay? They have 100% recording on diagnosis, but it doesn't mean that what they're recording is unknown, isn't an unknown category. Okay, but that, so we didn't break it down based on what the diagnosis was. Okay, so that's what the feedlots are currently recording that are working through this production animal consultation service. Okay, so we know the data is getting recorded at the feedlot, but how could we leverage this as seed stock breeders and germplasm providers to actually produce a tool that's going to help us breed animals that have lower treatment rates in the feedlot? Okay, so what we've been charged with doing is recommending performance recording procedures, if you will, for respiratory disease. And ultimately, those are going to be our goal is to get this data used in genetic evaluation and provide an opportunity to add genomic information. And to our knowledge, and at least going back, this is probably the first attempt at the Beef Improvement Federation establishing guidelines for a disease trait. Okay, so we're breaking a little bit of new ground, and you know, I anticipate these guidelines that we first come up with being modified as we gain more knowledge. Okay, so what the committee has decided at this point is we're going to recommend a tiered approach, given the different levels of recording at the feedlot industry. Obviously, what this is going to do, it may result in two different traits or ways to measure disease, but you're going to see in a moment what that enables us to do the way this is designed. And hopefully this is going to give us some flexibility in how we use data for evaluation and really leverage, give us some opportunities to leverage data for some more genomic research, with the end being we can use this data and genomic data to produce EPD that have higher levels of accuracy. Okay, so tier one data. Obviously, we need an animal ID that's treated, okay? If we're looking at the phenotypic data collection, and really we need the IDs of all animals in the lot, because if we don't have that, we really, all we're going to have is animals that got sick. We don't have anything to compare them against, right? So think about that as all your calves get recorded as an 80-pound birth weight. There's nothing to compare about. There's no variability. So it doesn't give us any value, right? Okay, so we also need in and out dates to determine where they're at in the feeding program. Sex will tell us something about contemporary groups and the owner origin of those cattle, which a lot of this is getting recorded already in the feedlot recording system. Okay, so it's there. How do we get it passed back, and how do we design our systems on the seed stock end to actually leverage this? Now, the treatment information we would like, obviously, all we really need is the date pulled. Okay, and some diagnosis. Now, we would like temperature at the Tier 1 level. And if you remember, in that summary, they've got 74% recording rate. Oops, sorry. 74% recording rate in the current system on body temperature. Okay, and then animal information that would also be useful is, did the animal die from respiratory disease, or was it railed? Okay, something along those. And that data is getting recorded as well. Then we could use this Tier 1 to create a binary observation for yes, they were treated for respiratory disease, or no, they weren't. Okay, so this is the basic level of what you might need relative to data to give us some information to produce an EPD that tells us something about susceptibility to respiratory disease. Okay, and temperature is preferred, and you're going to see why, because it helps us further delineate bovine respiratory disease in Tier 2. So Dr. Lowe, based on his experience, and Dr. Griffin put together these different tiers of respiratory disease. And notice this is different diagnoses, if you will. It's not levels of severity, but it's more specificity related with bovine respiratory disease. So in the end, this may translate into a more detailed phenotype, kind of like reproductive tract scoring versus heifer pregnancy. Reproductive tract scoring is a more detailed phenotype. Okay? Now, so it's going to maybe end up being a little different of a trait analysis, but the key thing is, if you're a feedlot and you can record this type of information, we can always go back and create Tier 1 because we know these animals were actually treated for respiratory disease. So it gives us some flow backwards in the whole system. But essentially, Dr. Lowe and Dr. Griffin suggested four classifications. And one is a presumed BRD. So, you know, this is something that pen riders would normally base their pulls on, right? They may have increased respiratory rate or more difficulty breathing, depression. They're not eating. You might have nasal discharge. But that's a presumed BRD case. Okay, so that's one classification of an individual. Okay, so we pull those animals. That's one level. Now, if we know something about those animals, so we have a PBRD. I'm going to think about different acronyms for this, but a presumed BRD. If when they're temp, they're over 104, essentially they've got an active inflammatory response, we've got this category of bovine respiratory disease, okay, an ABRD, if you will. Now, there's another classification that, I'll be honest, we're still working on, because it's those chronics, right? In this classification that Dr. Lowe and Dr. Griffin put together, if they are a presumed BRD, you temp them and they're below 104 and you're really not getting an active inflammatory response, they would class them as this chronic BRD. Okay, now, my definition of chronic are animals that you know, are continually getting pulled and treated. You know, they're chronics, right? From my standpoint. So we need to do a little more work on how we delineate that relative to the guidelines from something that is, you know, a repeat treat, if you will, versus something that we really have some objective measure that's below 104 degree temperature. Okay? And then there's the confirmed BRD. And this is really another more detailed classification of bovine respiratory disease. But it needs to provide some evidence of lung involvement, if you will. So it could be the result of thoracic ultrasound or the Whisper automated auscultation system, which is essentially a computerized stethoscope that scores animals. And we could use that a greater than a score of 1 to be a confirmed case of bovine respiratory disease. Okay, now, at this stage, we don't have this type of data. We've got data that is treated yes or no, but we could probably create this from some of the research projects that we've currently have underway. Okay? But this gives seed stock breeders and breed associations and cooperative breeding programs some level of classification where they may design their databases to start to record this and give us some information that helps us deliver this tool. Okay? So that's where we're going with how we actually score bovine respiratory disease. There's this other issue now of what are animals that are in the same contemporary group? Right, we're all used to contemporary groups from our birth contemporary group, our weaning contemporary group, and what we've actually submitted data to our breed association. But if you think about BRD pen, a pen group of animals is likely going to be an important environmental effect because your most likely vectors for shedding these disease organisms are going to be within pen. Okay. But if you think about this from what we've done traditionally from a breed association standpoint, and you think about a weight trait, you know, we group animals that were all born on the same ranch or the same farm, the same birth contemporary group. And then if you took those animals and you managed two groups of that birth cohort differently, they're going to get put in, they're going to get split in weaning contemporary groups. But we kind of start pasting all of those to compare animals that throughout their life have had the same opportunity to perform. So in this, using that standard definition, we might put in feedlot arrival date, where they came from, and the pen. Okay. But when you start mixing animals from multiple origins within a pen, you know, that we know that occurs in some situations, our concern is that we might overspecify or subdivide our contemporary groups so that we don't have a lot of variability. So we're back to that age-old problem. What if all your birth weights were 80? That doesn't tell us anything. Or all your heifers are pregnant, right? So if we look at the heifer pregnancy standpoint, you turn in a whole bunch of data and everything got bred. Doesn't tell us anything because they all have the same score. So we're a little bit concerned with that. So I want to give credit to Dr. Larry Keene, who's actually in the back, for coming up with another approach to how we might handle contemporary group. Okay, one thing we might do is in the genetic evaluation is separate that out as a separate fixed effect and try not to split those groups. Another more appealing group that really positions us for how we move into the future, depending upon how data starts to flow, is to fit pen as a random effect. Okay, this is a little bit statistical, but what this allows us to do is to say there's different variability amongst pens, and therefore there's different amounts of information within each pen, even if they're the same number of animals, because we have different treatment rates or different score rates. Okay? The other thing that this will enable us to do, because we don't really completely understand all of the epidemiology associated with respiratory disease, if you were really, I mean, this was what you were really interested in, we could start to account using this approach for pens that happen to be next to each other, okay? And we can start to look at the relationship between adjacent pens and the fact that some of our disease vectors may move from pen to pen, but it may not move from this pen in this alley to another pen 20 alleys down, okay? And we can start to account for those relationships. And so this in conjunction, we're going to give the breed associations and the groups producing the EPDs essentially two options. This will be the most straightforward, fitting pen as a separate main effect, just like you would fit sex in a genetic evaluation, bull versus heifer. Hey, if we have more detailed information, we can then start to use this approach that'll help us really leverage the information coming in. And we may not be able to look at the relationships or proximity, know the proximity within a feedlot, but really helps us value information, if you will, at different levels. Okay. So we've got a scoring system that's two-tiered depending upon data comfort of a feedlot, okay, where they could submit that information back to the owners and then hopefully go flow to the breed association, and then two approaches for you how we might account for contemporary group differences. Okay, so I'm going to end this. In summary, what this tells us is that what I've covered today is that there's some genetic improvement that is possible for susceptibility to bovine respiratory disease. We've got data being recorded in the feedlot. Okay? And I look at this as kind of where we started out years ago, where we weren't getting carcass data back to the breeders and to the owners in all situations. And now we've done a relatively good job starting to move that flow, okay? Especially for some organized progeny testing programs for a number of our breed associations. Okay? Our role as a guideline committee is going to submit a final recommendation to the board of directors probably by the mid-year meeting in September, October, November. That hasn't been set. and have them review this, and we're going to get some input from some feedlot owners as well, and submit this to the board for guidelines. So we'll go into our guidelines for how breed associations might organize a database, what they need to record to help to use this information in a genetic evaluation, with our ultimate goal being an EPD for selection of animals with reduced susceptibility to bovine respiratory disease. Okay, so I'm going to end that. If there's any questions, just want to give you an update. The process, once they're approved by the board, we will publicize those. You know, the guidelines only come out about, what, once every 5 years, 5-6 years. My guess is that they would probably be put on the website for people to read as kind of a fact sheet and then be incorporated in the full guidelines in our next big revision of the guidelines. So.